Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in today. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise.
We're here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So happy Thursday, and welcome to the show. I am making mistakes all over the place today, and I think it's largely because last night, Game 7 of the World Series. So I didn't sleep very much. Did you, Matt?
I did not.
Okay, so that's why I'm making mistakes today, because I am sleep deprived, but it was worth it. And, you know, I want to talk to all you grandparents out there. So if you're a grandparent, you can go out and you can lecture your grandkids. You can now go say you have no idea what it's like to live in a world where the Cubs haven't won a World Series. Kids just take that stuff for granted, you know. 106 years, something like that?
108 years.
108 years. That's amazing. Anyway, I am still on my Democracy Lane kick. I'm going to do that every day until the election. Get it out of my system because, you know, we're about to, obviously, elect another president. And as I look at some of the presidents of our past, they were quirky. And take a guy like James Buchanan. He was a perpetual bachelor. He was the only guy who was a bachelor. And he had the habit of closing one eye and leaving the other one open because he was nearsighted in one eye and farsighted in the other. So he did this in order to see well. Well, I think his Secretary of War thought he was sending him messages in Morse code, and his Secretary of War invaded Utah. I think. I'm not sure. I got to check that. I got to check my facts. And Teddy fit as a bull Roosevelt. He had the distinction of being the youngest president to be in office at age 42. His eyesight was so bad he couldn't recognize his own son without his glasses on. At one point during office, I think he was found discussing the Cuban policy with a cigar store Indian. But that's just, again, I don't know that to be a fact. I make up a lot of stuff at this job. But we've got a great hour coming up. We've got the David A.R. White. He's written a book called Between Heaven and Hollywood, Chasing Your God-Given Dreams. And David is an actor, a writer, a director, and a producer in Hollywood. And although he has many credits to his name, his career hit was God's Not Dead, which is the first in a series, and then God's Not Dead Part 2 came out, and he's on the studio line. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you're still there.
You guys are out of Minneapolis, huh?
Yeah, Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But we're in the
You know, I'm a big Vikings fan and have been for many, many years. And I don't, you know. Sometimes that's been a hard thing to do where I live.
Well, we've got a new stadium, which is awesome, and we were 5-0 until we lost the last two games. So, but you know, we're still encouraged.
I know.
Yeah, we were doing good.
Exactly.
And you,
well, we're going to return. We're coming back, right?
Yeah, indeed we are. Now you are from Dodge City, Kansas.
I am, but you know, I lived 6 years in Minnesota.
You did?
When I was little, yeah. And I just remember going out to some of the practices, and for whatever reason, I became a Vikings fan, and I could never shake it, even then when I moved to Kansas, and pretty much spent the rest of my growing up years there outside of Dodge City. I couldn't get on the Chiefs bandwagon,
yeah.
Ever. I couldn't lead the Vikings. They were in my blood. And so, but yeah.
I'm proud of you, David. I'm proud of you, man.
primarily just, yeah, from a little town outside of Dodge City, and I grew up as a Mennonite.
Yeah.
And saw one movie in the theater the first 18 years, and I was probably the least likely kid to go off to Hollywood, I'll say that.
Yeah, what's with all the ambition? You're making us look lazy.
I don't think it's that. Well, you know what? Which is, you know, really what this book kind of stems from is that it was this little dream that God had put in my heart that I couldn't shake. And I feel like, you know, Romans 12 talks about we all have different gifts according to the measure given each and every one of us. And everybody has a gift. Everybody has these dreams, these passions, these desires. And how in the world do you take those, what's on the inside of your heart, and put that into the writing on the wall and live out your passion in an actual day-to-day world?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big question.
Yeah, no kidding. So as a pastor's kid, I assume you got saved when you were 4?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it stuck.
Yep.
And it stuck, didn't it?
Yeah, my sister walked me down the aisle to accept Jesus when I was little. But you know, it's interesting because obviously being in Hollywood here and spending time on the different coasts, I find it's interesting because there's so often that middle America, you know, God exists. You know, people have relationships with him based on, you know, how some have close, some are, you know, but they still believe that he exists. And in L.A., that's not the norm. The norm is that he doesn't exist.
Oh, for sure.
And so, you know, I went through a period of my life trying to figure out, well, did I really accept the Lord when I was 4, or was it just kind of spoon-fed to me, and how do I know if I'm truly a believer,
mm-hmm.
And if God really exists and all of that stuff. And so... I do.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that, and that kind of came out where that's where God's Not Dead really came out in a way too, is because, I think we all have struggled with that universal question. And the biggest thing is that, you know, our kids and on the college campuses and all this stuff are being talked out of what they believe, or they're being, you know, and I think it's so important to actually know what you believe and why do you believe it.
Mm-hmm. David, I'm guessing that you've come across people that had Midwestern sort of upbringings that you meet in L.A. that maybe voted yes for God in their life but don't have a personal relationship with him. And you know, it sounds like you stayed true to the faith and you started living the dream God put in your heart, which is really cool. I want to let our audience know, too, again, that you've starred in more than 25 films and produced over 40. That's a significant body of work for the Hollywood scene.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about me if you want. I mean, we can change the subject, but I mean, it is, I am interviewing you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
oh, shucks.
At an early age, that dream to perform was inside of me. But then God, and I moved to Los Angeles. I was 19 years old. I didn't know anybody. I jumped right in after leaving from Bible school. I actually went to Moody Bible Institute for my entire family had gone, graduated, and met their significant others there. And then all gone into the ministry, my brother, my sister, my mom, my dad. And so I was kind of just expected to do the same thing. And my father always said, well, you have to go to, you know, you have to study a year of Bible at least. And so, you know, the biggest thing, one of the struggles that I had was how in the world, Lord, this thing inside of me, is it truly from you, or am I just, you know, how can I leave Bible school and go to Hollywood to be an actor and jump into the entertainment industry? I mean, that's, you know, how do you know if a call is from God? How do you know if it's from, or if it's self-motivating? And so I struggled with that for a while, but I ended up moving to Los Angeles. I was 19. And the Lord blessed me. Within 6 months, I was on a hit television show called Evening Shade with Burt Reynolds. And I did that kind of stuff. And then I started getting cast as an actor in Christian films and started really just having the hunger to, and I believe that it was put on my heart to make films that uplift and inspire the human spirit, to provide a consistent level of content as an alternative to what Hollywood was putting out there. And so when you say, well, you've produced over 40, 45 films, whatever it is now, it's not so much of me trying to accomplish of doing, you know, trying to break a record or do something like that. It's more of trying to just answer the call that I believe has been put on my heart by God.
Mm-hmm. That it's it's so fascinating that when you go there at age 19 and you score something pretty big within 6 months, that's kind of rare. You have to admit that that was an awfully nice break.
Yeah, it was an amazing break, especially for a kid from, you know, Kansas via Minnesota.
Right.
And Ed, to be surrounded, I don't know if you ever watched the show Evening Shade, but literally every one of the actors on there, the adults, had all won Oscar, Emmys, and Tonys. And they were all Burt Reynolds' friends, and he'd worked with forever. Yeah, so it was an incredible thing to be around these literally, they were legends. I didn't know who any of them were, of course, because I really didn't see very many movies growing up. Although I did know Burt Reynolds and I did know Smokey the Bandit, and mm-hmm. that was it. But it was awe-inspiring, and all of a sudden I found myself in cloud. You know, I felt like I belonged there. It was just it was an incredible experience all the way around in so many different ways. And it ended after about the third year in. I ended up getting fired. Bert had discovered me, and then he had fired me.
Oh.
And the story's in the book a lot, but I was let go, and all of a sudden I found myself outside of this incredible experience that God had put me in. And it was like, Lord, why did you let me then taste my dream if you were only just going to take it away?
Mm-hmm.
And I think so often we all come through, you know, we all have these times where we are the things that we, you know, we end up in many situations doing things that we don't want to do. And all of a sudden things don't go the way we want. You know, a divorce happens. We get let go from a job. We can't get a job that we want. You know, a death in the family, all kinds of just dramatic things that can happen to us in this thing called life.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of that, though, I think is during those times are all are ultimately when we most find what we start thinking about what we really want to be doing and what our passions and desires are. And a lot of times if we never would find ourselves in those positions, we wouldn't think and stretch us outside of where we're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what led me into the faith film industry and into producing and ultimately into starting, you know, a distribution studio. So God is good.
Yeah, no kidding.
All the time and all the time, God is good.
Well, David, you sound like a positive person, and usually I get a negative vibe from positive people. So I'm going to take
a
little...
I hope I'm positive.
Oh, no, you're very positive. I'm just getting that negative vibe. We'll take a little break when we come back. Lots more with David A.R. White. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. Be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. So glad you joined us today. I'm talking to David White. He's written a book called Between Heaven and Hollywood. And that song that you're listening to, is that the Newsboys, Matt? You're nodding yes. That was the music in his movie, God's Not Dead. And I know a very successful movie. One of the things in the book, David, that I read and it jumped off the page at me was fear wants your happiness, your hope, and your future. And fear will stop at nothing. That's my comment. And then you go on to say, fear will get everything he wants from you because you will give it to him willingly. Ouch.
Mm.
Oh, boy.
No kidding.
That was a tough shot to the kidney. Seriously.
I mean, you know, it is. It's so often we in life, we sit around, we're riddled by fear. We're riddled by self-doubt. We start to tell ourselves, well, someday I'll do that, or someday I'll go and do that. And if you look in your calendar, I know it's a simple solution, but if you look in your calendar, there is no someday. It doesn't exist. Shocker. It doesn't exist. And it's in going through that fear. That fear we build up, we give it so much strength. We're the ones who are really breathing in, you know, bringing the strength to that, whatever that is, that's stopping us from going through it. And when we get on the other side of it, we realize, oh, wow, you know, that it was something that I concocted in my mind. It was something that I brought to the table. And not to mention that there's hardships everywhere. There's you know, things that will stop us. But you can go through it. And I love this. We talk about, you know, for every hardship you're unable to endure, for every failure you withstand, could very well be the stepping stone of your success and the realization of your God-given dream. You have to go through it, and you have to keep going through it. Never stop, never give up, never give up.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the thoughts that you'll hear in your head when you're going through this fear, things like you're not smart enough, nobody likes you, you'll go broke chasing your dreams, you're not attractive enough. I mean, when you're laying this out in the book, is it easier after some success to look back and say those things, or were you not thinking those things at the time when you were just into the business and struggling?
I think it's always easier to look back on something once you've gone through it. There's no doubt about it.
Sure.
But there's, you know, there's, if we can remember, there's no one too common, too broken, too sinful, too uneducated, too poor, that he cannot be used by God to achieve his dreams. No one. That you were created, all of us were created for a specific purpose. You know, he designed each and every one of us in a different way, with all of our talents unique. It doesn't say that you're not going to go through hardship, because no matter what, Lord knows I've been through my own hardships in so many different ways. But you keep going. And if you follow what the Lord has truly put on your heart, then I do believe that you will get on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you travel a fair amount? Are you sticking in Los Angeles most of the time?
No, I do travel quite a lot.
Okay. Now, my question might be, when you're out of L.A., you must meet a lot of really lovely, well-intentioned people that say, you know, I've got a son, I've got a daughter who's 19, and, you know, they were leading the school play, and they're thinking about going to L.A. and making it big. What do you think? What do you say?
Well, I'm thankful that I'm not in charge of their where they're going.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? That the Lord is in charge of it. And it's something that my parents, it's interesting, because when I was growing up, I had told my dad once that I wanted to go into this field, to be an actor. And my dad, from his, you know, he was born in 36. He was, you know, from an older school. And he had said, well, David, you don't know how to, and then being a Mennonite too, he's like, you don't know how to sing and you don't know how to dance, so you can't be an actor. And that's what he truly believed.
Uh-huh.
It just didn't make any sense to him at all. And Hollywood was, you know, was a dark place. My father, the last place in the world he would have wanted me is to go here. And my mom the same way. And so, but somehow the Lord, but my dad did understand God's calling on your life. And my father was, he became a believer when he was 30-something, and then the Lord had grabbed hold of his life and had a calling on his life. And so he bent his knee before that calling and ended up in the ministry. And so he understood that. And when I, you know, here I was 18 years old, and I was calling my parents saying, Dad, I want to leave Bible school and I want to go to Hollywood to be an actor. And my father said something that I think is so profound, that I think is important for all of us parents to say this now, is he said, David, as long as you serve the Lord in whatever you do and keep him first, then we support you. And it wasn't an easy thing for them to do that. I mean, it's like the Lord had ordained and orchestrated even the mess that we ended up, my father ended up, and in the book there's all kinds of stuff about this, about how there was things that popped up in the church and all this stuff. And he ended up having to leave, or he left Kansas then and went to Canada of all places to up there with the church. And this is after he had done so much he had started the buildings of a radio station in Southwest Kansas that had never been done. He had a ministry in the jails. He had done so much. The Lord had just used him. And here, things didn't go his way, but I think that, you know, we're brought back to this from Romans 8:28, that God causes all things to work together for our good. that he had even, with that orchestration of that, it allowed me then to, going back to Kansas really wasn't an option at that point. And the Lord was prodding me then to go follow my dream that he had put inside of me, to go to L.A., to go to Hollywood. And so I think in all of our lives, when people do, there's no doubt about it, people come up to me all the time and they say, should I be an actor or should my son be an actor? You know, and one of the things that I say, well, is if you can't, and this is, it goes back to any dream that is inside of us, is if you can't let that dream go, if you can't shake it, you know, a God-given dream is a bothersome thing. It keeps bobbing its head to the surface of our heart, clamoring for our mind's attention. If you can't let it go, then there's a good chance that it's from the Lord.
Mm-hmm. You know, David, you sound so well-balanced, and I always think that broken people, really broken people, have a tendency of gravitating to the stage and the screen and the arts because they know eventually I'll get people that will accept me and love me and praise me. Look, I'm on stage and people are applauding. I must be okay. Do you find that there is a disordinate amount of broken people that are in your business?
Oh, yes. You know, when you deal with artists, you know, even as a producer and now as a distributor, we have the joy of dealing with all kinds of different artists, more and more. And then, of course, you know, starting out in this whole field just as an actor, you know, in the theater and diving in all to all of that, you know, I met so many different types of people that I had never met in my entire existence, you know, because when in my little town of Mead, you know, right outside of Dodge City, Kansas, there was no theater there. In fact, we did. I think I did. I was a munchkin in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I'd keep that off the resume.
You know, in high school, I think that was like my height of my acting.
Okay.
I didn't act.
Okay.
So it wasn't like I was looking for this self acceptance of this of you know being an actor. I had no idea, never been an actor before.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to you go to Moody Bible Institute, and Moody isn't what you call drama friendly. You know, there's no acting. There's, you know, they do have a mime troupe.
Yeah.
but there's no really artists there. And so, yeah, coming to Hollywood, it was like a massive eye-opening experience of the different types of people there. But I think all of us, whether or not we're artists, whether or not we're, you know, in just a regular job, is brokenness happens in our life. And where do you find God in the midst of that brokenness?
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get stuck in the box and you couldn't get out? The mime troupe at Moody Bible. I'm just picturing
it. You know what? I tried to be mime, but, you know, playing Jesus doing the Sermon on the Mount mime is really difficult.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good at it.
Oh, that's funny. All right. We're talking to David A.R. What does the A.R. stand for?
Well, I was the last kid, so I got all the names. I'd like to say it's always ready. David Always Ready White.
I love it.
But it's David Andrew Roy White.
I love it. It's great. And he's written a book called Between Heaven and Hollywood. You may be familiar with his movie, God's Not Dead. So we're going to have a lively second half discussion with David. And if you want to call and ask a question, give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Talking to David Always Ready White. He's written a book called Between Heaven and Hollywood, Chasing Your God-Given Dream. And, you know, David, there's a couple different kinds of failure, and everybody knows that you got to have lots of failure, especially in this business, because I know Jay Leno says you have to write 14 jokes that don't work to get one that does. And I always say you never really write anything, you only rewrite it. Because you always have to be working, everything has to be evolving, and you have to be careful not to let failure stop you. I think you had a conversation at a bank with Leslie Nielsen, and you asked him, "What's one thing that you can? What one piece of advice?" And he said, "Perseverance."
Yeah, and really, it was my first day in L.A., and I stumbled into a bank to rob it. No, I did not. I stumbled into a bank. And I ran into Leslie Nielsen, and you know Leslie, if you know Leslie Nielsen,
oh, yeah.
From the remember the airplane movie.
Oh yeah.
And, my name's not Shirley.
Right.
And I said, "What's the secret of your success?" And he said, "Perseverance, kid. Perseverance. You're gonna have your ups. You're gonna have your downs, but persevere." And clearly, he did that in his career. So, you know, in such a, I had the pleasure of going back and looking at a lot of the different things that he did over the years. But yeah, that is the I think that's one of the secrets of life as well.
Yeah, it's certainly just not your business. It's being able to be resilient and not putting your stock in what happens to you on an everyday basis, but in how much God loves you, cares about you, and wants you to live an obedient life. I mean, I think what happens for many that get into the entertainment business is the candy store gets bigger and bigger relative to how much success you have. And that's when a lot of the self-destruction can start.
Absolutely. In so many different ways, you know, there's no doubt about it. I see people riddled with just that. Hollywood is known for its power, sex, fame, money, you know, and all these different things. It's interesting after God's Not Dead came out, and you know, we learned a lot about perseverance when PureFlix was established in 2005. And it was me and two other buddies of mine, Russell Wolf and Michael Scott, and we again it came back to that whole thing about wanting to make films that uplift and inspire the human spirit to bring people to higher levels of insight to who God is and the purpose that He has for their lives. And in the midst of that, by year two, three, was right around 08, 09, we went through a big drought, you know, and where we almost went 2 years without a salary. We ended up having to sell everything we had just to keep our lights on and our employees working. And I learned that my wife really did love me. but it wasn't easy. And we released, you know, 80 films up to right before God's Not Dead came out. And when that movie came out, it that opening weekend against a myriad of just obstacles all the way leading up to that. There's so many of them. But in the midst of it, the Lord finally saw us through. I think right before, the biggest thing was, you know, we had to raise this $6 million. We hadn't really put any movies in the theaters, but we felt again that God was pushing us beyond our borders. In the book, I talk about, you know, how do you know if a dream is from the Lord? One of the ways is that it's going to be bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when we're kids, so often we have these big dreams, and what happens when by the time we reach adults, you know, they get chopped down to these very small, manageable proportions. Why? Well, we tell ourselves because we don't want to be disappointed, or we tell our kids, well, we don't want you to be disappointed, son or daughter. And so, you know, just go with something that's easy and that you can accomplish. And I think it's the opposite of what we should be doing. We should be setting our goals higher, not lower, because our God is truly the author of bigness, so to speak, not littleness. And so here we are, one of our things of setting our dreams, you know, of setting that call that was even larger than us was here. We had been a company for about 10 years and we had a nice place where we released a movie to DVD. It would go on television. It would go through churches and everything. And then we felt God saying, no, you have to, now I want you to take those movies to the theater. I want you to take them beyond where you are comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And so God's Not Dead. We made that little movie. We had to raise $6 million to put it in the theaters. We didn't have that money all the way up almost until we released, and the studios turned us down. Even the faith-based different companies, we could not find the help that we needed from anyone. And God finally brought in that last bit of money. We almost mortgaged our company, basically, to release this movie. And the weekend that it came out, so the God came through at the last minute so we could actually do it. And then, you know, it came out on a Friday. That Monday morning, all of a sudden, it broke all these records. It was, you know, Hollywood was calling us. Everybody from Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, you know, every news place on the planet. And they all had the same question for me. It was interesting. They would say, well, what is the secret of your success? The irony of that is it brought me back to, you know, that very first conversation I ever had with Leslie Nielsen about perseverance. And I think God calls all of us to persevere. But the secret of my success, and I'll go even one step farther, and the secret of your success and all of our successes is I let go finally of what I wanted for myself. I let go of what I wanted for myself. And I said, Lord, you take my life. You do with it what you will. And I let him do with it what he wanted. And so that was, you know, going to going above and beyond. You know, Ephesians 3:20 talks about he will do exceeding abundantly beyond anything that we could have ever asked or imagined. And God did that with God's Undead 2. You know, that was an unbelievable, it was the number one independent movie of 14. Hollywood was calling all the, you know, they have these massive boardrooms where they sit around and they're called war rooms is mm-hmm. what they call them, you know, how they're going to take over the world basically. And William Morris and CAA. And what we found through different sources was what they were discussing was who is PureFlix and what is this God's Not Dead and how do we do the same thing?
Wow.
And, you know, and it was a frustrating thing for them on one sense because it didn't make any sense how this little company who had this little kernel of an idea, who had this little kernel of a dream, basically, from these three guys that really shouldn't have gone off and done this, created now one of the most profitable and largest faith and production and distribution faith studio in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's God.
You know, David, I would guess that most people are naive about how your business works. Most people would think, oh, you make a movie, then you go drive your Ferrari. Doesn't work that way, does it?
I don't think anything in life works that way, unless you're like a big drug dealer or something, maybe. No, you know, it takes years and years of work, and it takes, you know, and again, in the book, we talk about, you know, between heaven and Hollywood, chasing your God-given dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like God put these dreams and these desires into each and every one of us. And there's a lot of curves in the road. And there's a chapter on if plan A doesn't work out, don't worry about it because there's 25 other letters in the alphabet.
Mm-hmm. Which I love.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't have to stop right there. If it doesn't go exactly like you think it should be going in your mind, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right. Just keep going.
Yeah, I love that. Now, you talk about in the book that some people really never achieve their God-given dream, and there's specific reasons why they never do that. Let's talk about those. For one, people think that it's harder than they thought. That's obstacle number one, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's always harder than you think.
Yeah. And then suffering from indecision, what do you mean by that?
There's often times when we don't know exactly, should we go left, should we go right? Should I go forward, should I just stay?
Okay.
And sometimes things aren't really crystal clear.
Okay.
And go ahead, sorry.
No, that's perfect, that's... Continue.
Yeah, I mean, things aren't crystal clear, and we never know. You know, I think it comes down to in the beginning of our days is bending our knee before the Lord and saying, Lord, take my life, do with it what you will, Father. Mm-hmm. I let go of what I want for myself, and I give it to you, God. And it doesn't mean that we're going to be carbon copies of you know, well, God's going to, you know, I think at an early age, I always thought, Lord's going to send me off as a missionary in New Guinea. Or, you know, in the middle of a jungle, and I don't do well with jungles, and I don't like snakes, and how am I going to do this? My father, at an early age, his dream for me was to become an evangelist. And I was like, Lord, I was like, Dad, I don't want to become an evangelist. That's not what I want to do. And it's easy to say, first of all, I think there's a lot of people along the way that want to put us in boxes. They want to continuously tell us, well, you should be doing this or you should be doing that. I grew up in a time that college was the most, it was the most important thing that I go to college and I have a degree and I need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I am a complete and utter failure at life. I really believe that. And it wasn't that because my parents were pushing that. I think it was more that my whole environment and everywhere where I was around, and I just bought into that. And not to say that college isn't very important, because it is important, and it's, you know, in college you are able to sort out a lot of things. But it's also like each and every one of us are individual. We are all unique. We all have different callings on our life. And for some of us, it's not college. For some of us, we talk about this in the book, is that we talk about, you know, as a woman, her desire is not wrong to have a desire to be a mom and to be a wife. And you could say, well, what do I know about that? I'm a guy. I don't know anything about that. Except for the fact that all of us have our unique callings. And I think it's so important that we don't look too much to the left and we don't look too much to the right, but we follow that path that the Lord has put us on.
Okay. So I'm going to try to contain these five thoughts. So the dream was harder than they thought. They suffer from indecision. Now they lack self-confidence. That can be a tough one. Because everyone I know has that little season of, I don't know if I'm as good as I think I am.
Absolutely, and I think that's the beauty of God, how he takes the small things, the small kernels of an idea, he takes the smallest things in the world, and he uses them in such extraordinary ways. And you never know how, whatever that is in your life, how God will use it and how he will expand you out for that. We talk about, you know, learn to be comfortable in the uncomfortable. There's so many things in life that we don't want to do. We don't want to go outside and do that, because that's like the last thing that is comfortable to us, not comfortable. And yet I think that's also so important to push us above and beyond where we're at, because you never know what's around that corner. That again, it's sometimes it's not exactly like you think it's going to be. When I moved to Hollywood, I never in a million years imagined that I'd be running a studio at one point.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make any sense. Yet I knew that I wanted to produce, but that was like in years to come. And here I was in my late 20s. I found a time when some people would say, wow, you should move home or you should quit, because your career has all of a sudden slowed. So you must have done something really wrong, or you must be bad, or you must, you know, you have all these things going wrong with your life. And there's a lot of different stories in this book about the ridiculous things that I had to go through. And one of them is, you know, all of a sudden here I was on a hit television show, and within 5 years, I was playing, and you can kind of read about how, but all of a sudden I'm playing Barney the Dinosaur at a party, at a kid's party in South Central in Compton. And, you know, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of times, and you could, and it's not just one time in my life that has been like this. There's been many times, and I'm sure, you know, for everybody listening, you've all gone through these times where they're exceptionally, they don't align up with what you thought was going to happen. And that's okay, because God can work through it. And in the midst of all of this, he stretched me to go into producing, to actually put together, because one of the gifts that he had given me was putting together a really extraordinary groups of people. And we did that on our little first movie. We raised $87,000. There was four of us. We put our own everything we had into it. We also, you know, our friends and family loaned us money, and we made this little movie because we believed that that's what we were supposed to do. And we ended up going out in the movie, like it did exceptional. And it wasn't because, I don't think it was a brilliant movie, but it's touched people's lives all over the world. And again, God took that little kernel of an idea just because we were willing to do it. Whatever didn't seem comfortable at the time, but we were willing to take that step. And I think that's so important in each and every one of our lives.
Oh, what a great thought. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with David White. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. We'll be right back.
Risk it all for you, Lord. I need you to wake me.
Hello, friends. Welcome. We're talking to David White today. He's written a book called Between Heaven and Hollywood, Chasing Your God-Given Dream. And I don't know if I got my information right, David, but I heard that Burt Reynolds fired you from Evening Shade because you wanted to write your lines on Burt's forehead. Because you had trouble remembering your lines. So you thought, if I just write them on Burt's forehead, I won't have to worry about it.
You know, what's interesting is that Burt, I love Burt, that he gave me my start. I'm be always eternally grateful for him. And he, and as he's helped so many other young guy kids get into the industry as well. You know, he had his own theater in Florida in the school in Florida for a long time. But he, it's funny because I think when, you know, anytime you're in the producing seat and you're doing multiple things, and a lot of times you find that you lack some certain time to learn your lines. I remember at the beginning of that of the episodes, Burt would have his lines in the paper that he'd be reading at the start of not every episode, yeah, but a lot of the episodes. And my firing happened because of, you know, he had in this particular episode, the kids of the show were playing the adults. And so he had picked me to play him.
Okay.
And so his wife in the show was played by Mary Lou Henner. And so he had cast Hilary Swank, was sometimes my girlfriend in the show. And so she was playing my wife.
Okay.
In this high school play. And so I had the mustache. We rehearsed for the week. I tried to figure out how in the world I could impersonate Burt Reynolds, and I wanted to do it justice. And then we went out and he introduced us before the studio audience. I had a little conversation with him, and I think Burt had, as all of us, you know, when we reach middle age, Burt was going through a divorce with Lonnie at the time, and it was a tough time for him, but he had maybe put on some weight. And so I went to him thinking, as a young kid who doesn't think, you know, you're not thinking too much when you're my age at that point, and you know, your early 20s. And I said, hey, Burt, would it be cool if I put like a big pillow in my stomach? Because I think that would just be awesome, you know, and it would be a much more funnier visual and everything like that. And so he was okay with it. But then when he introduced me, I went out there and I looked at Burt and I looked down at his stomach and then I looked at mine and I patted it and I did my little impersonation of it, you know, the thing.
Yeah.
And the audience roared, and Burt had this strange look on his face, and he turned his rings around on his hand, and he whacked me. He put his arm around me and just smacked me in the ear.
Oh.
And I found out later that, you know, that Burt had, you know, he would hit people that he had an affinity for, that he liked. So, you know, I was there, but then also I ended up getting off the show. I did one more episode, and then I was gone.
Oh, funny.
I'd gone back to Burt, you know, a couple weeks later, and just to clear the air. And I sat with him in his dressing room for about an hour almost. And you know, the kids were on the way out of the show. The show was starting to wrap up around that time. But the irony is that I didn't see him for almost 20 some years. And I just finished this sitcom doing these 10 episodes of a show called Hitting the Brakes that was one of the creators, and, you know, and I got to cast my dad in it. And at the end of every episode, I read this journal from my father, and so I cast Burt Reynolds. And so a couple months ago, I had the pleasure of going out to Florida and hanging out with Burt Reynolds, and I hadn't seen him in 20-some years, and there I am hiring Burt Reynolds.
Oh,
so the irony of that, and it's just, you know, that I just go back to the faithfulness of God, how he just brings things full circle, and it was just one of those, you know, one of those moments.
David, we have just a couple of minutes left, and as you are chasing your God-given dreams, a couple of things I want you to address is, you know, the question, does your dream glorify God, and does your dream serve others? Those are important questions.
So important. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not one to just say, hey, you certainly don't need to be doing what I'm doing to make it make sense, or, you know, all of us have our specifics. Romans 12 talks about we all have different gifts according to the measure given to each and every one of us. We all are different. We're all individual. We're all unique. And God created us that way for his glory, for his purpose, ultimately for his purpose. And so I think it's so important that we wake up every day and we say, Lord, you take my life. You do what you want with me, and I will serve you, and I will give you my life. And in that process of letting go of what we want and following him, we will truly find success. If you live God's dream for you instead of the dream you have for the others, then you will not fail, and I truly believe that.
Mm-hmm. Those are very encouraging words. I know everybody, even people who are been struggling their whole life just to try to figure out what their dream is, that they can go chase. You know, a lot of people spend an inordinate amount of time in that zone. I don't know what God wants me to do. I've got all this passion for this, but I don't know how to make a living at it. And then there's this lucky stiff named David White that gets to make movies and drive a Ferrari. I don't know about the Ferrari part, but there can be a natural sense of jealousy and how can he live his dreams and how can I live mine? And, you know, I just think there's a lot of people that are suffer needlessly because they have ideas they can never get wings for.
I love this quote. It says, "A dream deferred is not a dream denied, for God can bless you with a dream bigger than the one you ever had for yourself." And I'll say that he did it for me, and I'm nothing special. I'm just an ordinary guy.
Yeah.
Kansas via Minnesota. And he can do it for you.
Yeah.
He did it for me. He certainly can do it for you. And just start where you're at. Don't put these expectations that you have to be more than where you're at. Just start today with something small, with something little. Take the kernel, that seed of an idea that he has put in your heart, and move forward on it. Mm-hmm. And you'll be amazed to see what God will do.
Yeah. David, what was the hardest chapter in the book to write?
Boy, you know, writing a book is not easy. I mean, people gave up to me for a while to say, "Hey, you should write a book, or you should do this or that." And the reason why I wrote this book really is that it comes down to, I didn't want to just tell my story because I'm just one of many, many, many stories.
Sure.
But the bigger thing is that I hope that it encourages each and everyone listening and out there that when God puts something on our heart, that it trust him for that, because
mm-hmm.
God is faithful. That, and I come back to this simple verse, Psalms 37:4-5. Actually, Proverbs 3:5-6 is the one that I want.
Right.
Trust in the Lord with all of your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he truly, surely will, without a shadow of a doubt, direct your paths.
Yeah, David, would you pray for the dream chasers out there today that have heard your story and are excited about what you've shared, and just pray for them?
Sure. Lord, I just say thank you so much for this time and for everybody listening. And I pray, Lord, that you would do just a miracle on their lives and in their lives, Father, and right where they're at, no matter what they're going through and the suffering that's happening. And there's no doubt about it. It's all over us in this world, Father. But we are more than victors. And we praise you ahead of time that you will do exceeding abundantly beyond anything that we could ever ask or imagine. And we give you our dreams, and we give you our hearts, and we give you our lives. And we say, Lord, take us, use us for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
David, it's so nice to know a man of God like you is out in Hollywood. Thank you for all your work and what you do, and for living your dream and blessing all of us.
Thanks, Bill.
It's awesome. God. Yeah. I've been talking to David White. He's written a book called Between Heaven and Hollywood, Chasing Your God-Given Dream. You might know him from his movie God's Not Dead, along with about 25 others he's been involved with. And he's been a delightful inspiration to me to hear his stories of being able to take on Hollywood at age 19 and persevere. That's the word. God gave him a vision and a dream, and he just stuck with it. That's encouraging to all of us. So I hope you enjoyed today's show. Thanks for listening today. Have a great, great night. God bless everybody.